the meeting on rules today. And as you can tell, we have a very busy schedule. We're going to do one quick short thing, however, because we have our esteemed state treasurer here. So if he would like to come to the podium and identify himself and for what purpose he is at this Rules Committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, State Treasurer Ben Westland. I am here to report that on exactly 1 week ago today, in a committee room far, far away, there was an egregious, heinous act of removal of particularly delightful, enjoyable candies from your dais. I would like not to mention the name of the individual that was responsible for said heinous act, but I, as the treasurer, somewhat the equalizer of all things, am here to repair the loss that was suffered by this committee, and I am prepared to do that today, Mr. Chair. And I'd just like to repay your generosity from this very heinous individual, whose name will go unmentioned.
Is this legal?
But we did appreciate your visit. We did appreciate your visit last week to the county.
Someone was hungry, and it helped get me through the day, so I just want to make sure. Yes, these are under $5 each, okay. So, you know, let me return these to your committee. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Permission.
We do have a question. Representative Girard.
Mr. Chair, yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, do we get the vote on this?
No.
Yeah, that's him.
Anyway, I appreciate you coming and the levity. We have some very serious business, but this, I think that at times when all that happens, it is also nice, and you can share these down the aisle with people as they get hungry today. With that, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2895. We'll have a short explanation, and then I would accept a motion.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. As you will recall, the committee previously considered this measure and approved a motion to add the Dash 2 amendment to House Bill 2895. That was done at your meeting on 5-15-09, so no action is needed on the amendment today. As amended, the bill permits the Secretary of State to designate one or more organizations to establish citizen panels to review not more than 3 initiated state measures and to create statements of not more than 150 words on each measure reviewed. It limits the number of state measures for which any organization can establish those citizen review panels, requires the Secretary to print the statements in the voter's pamphlet along with a disclaimer indicating that the opinions expressed are not official opinions or opinions endorsed by the state of Oregon or any government agency, requires the cost to convene and conduct a citizen panel and any costs associated with printing statements in the voter pamphlet to be provided by the organization that established the citizen panel and establishes eligibility criteria.
Do we have some amendments we need to accept, or we already?
We have already voted in the Dash 2 amendment on your meeting of the 15th.
Mr. Chair.
Yep.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2895 as amended with the Dash 2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Berger moves House Bill 2895 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gelser.
Thank you. Just briefly, I've struggled with this bill a little bit. I will give it a yes vote, but I think that it's important when people read the reports and the statements that come out of this to recognize that people that participate in these activities are often rather self-selected and have a lot in common with one another. The primary thing being an interest in reading legislation and participating in long discussions about vetting it out. That's not necessarily representative of the broad swath of Oregonians. So I have that small concern with it, but I do think it's a good idea to engage people, and we'll give it my vote.
Okay. Any other discussion? Thank you. I think the people have worked very hard on this bill to make it have no cost to the government and to get at least one opportunity to do some scientific study on whether or not having this kind of citizen panel works. So with that, I'll take a roll call vote.
Representative Girard?
Aye.
Representative Gelser? Hatcher?
Aye.
Representative Jessen?
Excused.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Roland?
Aye. Motion passes, and we'll send that to the floor, and we're going to assign Representative Harker to carry this bill. So we're going to close our work session on 2895, and we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3492. And before we get going, I want to explain to people, this bill is not ready. The amendments have not come, so we don't even know what it is that this bill is currently about. So we're going to have Representative Reed give us a short explanation of what the amendments are supposed to be. We will reschedule a public hearing and a work session as soon as we get those back. But for today, the public hearing is just to let everybody have an idea of what's really in this bill in the future, so that people have an idea. And then when the amendments come out, you can see them out on the, we'll get them on the web as soon as we can, but our goal is to try to continue to have people know what it's really about and then really have our public hearing at that point. So that's why, and I know a number of people signed up, but let's hear what it is about, and then we'll have another public hearing where we invite people back. So with that, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, Tobias Reed, State Representative from District 27 in Beaverton. The bill you have before you is an attempt to make sure that the state is recovering the costs associated with reviewing applications as it was written for liquefied natural gas terminals and pipelines that are related to those terminals. We've heard a lot of testimony and a lot of perspectives on that issue, and one thing that I think everyone has been able to agree on is that the consideration of these issues costs the state in the form of having to review applications. And in the current budget environment, a number of us thought it was reasonable that the folks who are causing the state that cost ought to participate in helping the state recover that cost. Since the original request was in, we've begun to broaden that effort so that it would apply to a broader range of similar sorts of projects, and we have a very similar intended bill advancing through the process on the Senate side, and it's certainly my hope that it will pass through the Senate and come to this committee and have your support at that time. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the Senate bill number that I can...
It is dropping today, so I don't...
You don't have a bill.
I don't have a bill number yet. I was with one of our Senate colleagues this afternoon working out the final details, and she was headed to the clerk's office to drop it, so I hope we'll have the number quite soon.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, does the concept that we'll be seeing is there any is it strictly cost recovery, or is it a bill that would allow one to essentially go to the front of the line in any sort of permitting process if they pay a fee, or is it just cost recovery?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, it is just cost recovery. The bill essentially says, very similar to the bill that we have before us in this hearing, before the application proceeds, the applicant has to sign an agreement. This is, and we've further explain some of the detail to make sure that the Department of Administrative Services in the draft that we'll see hopefully from the Senate would be the agency responsible for all the various agencies of the state that might be involved. So essentially one check to one agency who would then deal with the other various agencies who might be reviewing different applications or different forms of applications.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Having heard that, there are a couple people who had signed up. Is there anybody that really is not able to come back or whatever when we reschedule or talk about this other bill? I don't see anybody. Thank you. Then we're going to close this public hearing, and we'll move those over and deal with it or find out how the Senate bill is going. If it isn't moving, we'll get this one going. So one way or the other, that bill will get a hearing. With that, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3153A. And we'll get a short explanation by our administrator.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. House Bill 3153A adds criteria for siting a utility facility in an area zoned exclusively for farm use by requiring the utility provider to make a reasonable effort to locate utility transmission and distribution lines so that they have the least practical impact on the farming operation. There is a proposed Dash 5 amendment which replaces the measure. It defines high-value farmland and transmission line, specifies that a utility provider will consult with the owners of high-value farmland after receiving the appropriate siting permits and prior to installing a transmission line to the site to site the line in a manner that minimizes the impact on farming operations. It is common for utility providers to site facilities on rural lands to meet their urban customers' power needs because of lowered land costs and fewer landowners to contract with. Utilities are required to consider siting their facilities within existing right-of-ways are encouraged to consider siting their facilities within existing right-of-ways but are not required to do so.
Okay, and with that, we are going to invite some people to come forward. First, Larry Dyke. And we might have Mickey Killingsworth come at the same time. We'll have two people. That'll be good.
For the record, my name is Larry Dyke. I farm in Washington County. I raise cantata blackberries, blueberries, grass seed, wheat, beet seed. Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, committee members. I support this bill. I feel it's one thing to tell farmers that you must allow utilities to come on your property for public good, but not to give the farmers, the property owner, the right to at least say where the best place to put the line is outrageous. I grew up on a farm. Became an engineer, and then worked for 13 years, came back to the farm. I understand construction. I understand utility sitings. This is America, land of freedom. Yet, you can stand in your driveway, have a utility company representative tell you that they're going to run a 2-foot diameter natural gas line through your property, and this is what they're going to offer you. And if you say, no thanks, they tell you they will use their power of condemnation and take your property. And what money you may get then may not be as much as they're offering right now. When you tell them the answer is still no, and you'll lay down in front of the equipment, at that point in time, they'll tell you they have you arrested. This threat actually happened to me about 10 years ago. And when they don't get what they want, they use intimidation. The utility lobbyists can tell you all day long how utilities company work with landowners, but that just isn't true. The uproar is because is how farmers are treated. It's systematic the way they work farmers and treat farmers. Several years ago, the law was changed to reflect a compromise, a solution from farmers, utilities, and a work group. It was the intent to give utilities certainty to be able to cross farmland when they absolutely had to in a short location if no alternative exists. What actually happened is that the law was interpreted that if a utility must use any amount of farmland, even 6 inches, they could site the entire route on farmland even without finding any other alternatives, no matter how long the route was. In this case, it was 60 miles of gas line that went through farmland just because they could prove that one spot, one section had to go through farmland. Sending this issue to another work group is not a solution. Farmers need some type of negotiating power. Right now, the utilities have the law on their side, and they have power of condemnation on their side. And the farmers, they have nothing. I don't think any of you want to stand in your driveway and be told to get out of the way of the utility. But I believe if it did happen to any one of you, you would look at it totally different. Please fix the law so that farmers have some say on where to cite the line, and it could at least have the utility work with us with at least impact. I've also included a copy of my testimony that when I tried to speak in front of the Sustainability Committee and didn't get an opportunity. And also there's a sketch on the back which shows something that we put together several years ago when we were dealing with the gas line running through the property on where would be the best place to run a utility line. And certainly, when you're running through ag land, there are a lot of advantages of running that pipeline within the road right-of-way, just as we show here in the sketch and list 15 different reasons why it is the best option. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Roebling and committee members. I'm Mickey Killingsworth, for the record, from Central Oregon, from Madras. I originally was going to testify on behalf of Jefferson County Farm Bureau, but after looking at the amendment, I can't do that because my board hasn't seen the amendment. So I will testify as myself, as a farmer from Central Oregon. And I did not submit written testimony because I wasn't sure I'd get here in time to do the traffic on the pass, but I made it in 3 hours without a ticket. So that was an accomplishment. I was part of a work group in 1997 on the utility fix, not the same work group that Mr. Dyke is referring to. This was a work group that met up in room 350, I think, and it was hot and stuffy, didn't have air conditioning, and there was legislation proposed at that time, and all the negotiations broke down, so nothing happened. Then the governor appointed a work group that Mr. Dyke is referring to that started meeting in 1999, I believe. But what I want everybody to understand, it is a problem. You saw the people come from Yarhill County, Baker County, and traveled over here for the hearing earlier in the year before Representative Reed's committee. It's not just a Valley problem. It's not a Central Oregon problem. It is a true problem. And the problem is it destroys the integrity of a farm operation if you can't say where you want the line. We know we, by law, have to, for public good, cite utilities. And as utilities are being cited more and the population is increasing, the demand is greater to go out on the farm ground. But we passed Measure 49 to protect the farm ground. And I'm really pro-land use, and I believe in protection. But that's one of the reasons why some farmers won't support land use, because they say we get picked away and taken away, and nobody respects us. You know, we celebrated 150 years of Oregon's birthday this year, and agriculture has always been key in it. We're still key. I have been watching the Sustainability Committee hearings on and off, which is great to be able to watch it from Central Oregon by live video stream. And I've listened to the stuff about green power, how it's going to cost more. And it seems that it's okay that it costs more if we're going to go to more green power, but it's not okay for farmers to say, just give us a say on where you're going to site this so you don't destroy my operation. But the main thing I want you to understand is cell towers and windmills, farms, they come to farmers and they say, you know, we think there's a good market opportunity for here. They don't come with threats of condemnation. I got a letter of condemnation, a threat of condemnation, last fall when the local water district was going to put a water line through my farm. And I got the letter, then I got the call, and then the second call was, well, we'll just do condemnation. And I said, go for it, guys. I will tie you up and you will not meet your schedule. Well, guess what? They're going across the road in the road right away. They aren't going through my farm, because it was going to cost them more money to fight me and then to meet their deadline. And it's not just that it's big utilities, it's little utilities, but the thing that bothers me is it's always, the third thing is condemnation by law, we will do this. If I had my way, this bill would say they could not do any condemnation. It would have to go to mediation and be resolved that way. But I'm not the writer of the bill, I don't have my way. But that's my basic testimony is, how can windmill farms and cell towers come and offer you a market opportunity and not due condemnation, but yet we have the utilities always threatening that. And I appreciate you guys doing this, and I know you'd rather be someplace else right now, and I'm going to tell you the traffic is really bad. Wear your seatbelt, keep the speed limit.
Any questions for this panel? Representative, I'll go Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not so much a question as just a comment to thank you both for coming back. I know you were here before, and as a challenge, as those of us who are lucky enough to hold a gavel occasionally know, to try to get everyone in on time, and I appreciate your willingness to come back and share your perspective.
Representative Berger.
Thank you. Thank you. I am not on the other committee, so this is my first time through with it. And sometimes in this committee we feel like we're walking in the middle of a conversation that started somewhere else, and so thank you. Did I understand that you came all this way, and thank you, to endorse or say that your organization endorsed House Bill 3153, the engrossed version, but had not seen the Dash 5 amendments until you got here? Was that...
Chair Roblin and Representative Bircher. Correct. And so I'm not testifying for Jefferson County Farm Bureau. I'm testifying just as Mickey Killingsworth, and I will support the language as it is now, and I hope when it gets to the Senate we maybe can clear some things up.
Representative, yes, Representative Berger.
Tell me somebody at some point about high-value farmland. I understand your high-value farmland, but I'm thinking of Jefferson County, and is it high-value?
Chair Roblin and Representative Berger. Yes, it is. Jefferson County has 58,000 acres that are irrigated, and that's high-value, and our high-value crops are, if you eat baby carrots, they're really cut-and-peel carrots. We raise 85% of the carrot seed in the United States and 25% of the world carrot seed. We raise 90% of the peppermint tea leaf in the United States and over 55% worldwide. Those are just two commodities that we raise in Jefferson County. We have cool nights, long hot days, and we're great for seed, and we adapt. We used to be the clover seed market at one time, and we adapted. Then we were sugar beet seed market, and we adapt as commodities and prices mandate. We do that.
And I will never eat a baby carrot without thinking of you again.
Thank you.
And I do. I think I was remiss in saying the two bills we're hearing today and some of the amendments, I do want to acknowledge that it was Representative Reed. There have been people who said, why don't you just have a work session and move this through and do that kind of stuff. He really felt we needed to have both public hearings on these bills so that people could have a chance to come, and I'm appreciative that you did. I appreciate him for pointing that out, that there were a lot of people that came and there wasn't enough time, and we're time limited. I mean, we probably will expect only 25 minutes on this bill, and I think it looks like the numbers will be able to get there, and then about an hour on the other bill. So we've got some people, we've got an order, we think we're going to get all those people through, but it's always tight, and I appreciate you guys coming.
Thank you, Representative Rowland, and Representative Reed and committee members, and I'm going to head home. And hopefully I don't have a speeding ticket on the bus.
Safe trip. Tom Gallagher, Tom
O'Connor,
and Gary Bauer.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tom Gallagher representing PGE. Let me just take a second to talk about the base bill on 3153 for the benefit of the members that haven't sat through the hearing in the other committee. There truly is a continuing conflict between the public policy of siting a lateral transmission line, be it gasoline, electricity, natural gas, or water, across farmland. And the way in which that's done and the process in which it's done, I think, is always going to need constant attention and review. And what 3153 does is it provides us with another way of and I like the way that Mr. Dyke said it, it's another way of balancing the process. If I could speak for a second then on the amendments, the Dash 5 amendments, which we're also supportive of, I'm sorry. The Dash 5 amendments do three things, I think, for us at PGE. And by the way, we cite, under the renewable energy policy, we're citing more and more wind turbines. The wind turbine discussions go fairly smoothly because that's an agreement between the landowner and the use of the property itself. Where the conflict then arises is when you have to run a transmission line from the wind farm to the main tie line where that power can be transmitted to wherever it needs to go. So that transmission line itself, fairly large operations. They're 20-foot base sometimes, depending on the size of the line. So those lines are going to go across farmland. That's the only way they can get from the wind farm to the place where they have to be delivered. What the Dash 5 amendments do to the bill help us on three different ways. One of the things here is when you go through a siting process, there are a number of routes being considered. So there's like two parts of the process. The first part of the process is you're trying to decide what the proper route is, and that's a certificate or permit, usually under EPSEC, the Energy Facility Siting Council. It can be other ways, but usually under EPSEC. And so there are a number of pieces of property under review in that process, and each of the individual people who might be in that route have a concern and a worry, and they're involved in that first part of the permitting, where the site is actually, the line is actually decided to be sited. So that may involve a lot more property owners who are under review than will actually be involved in the construction. What the Dash 5 amendments do is they say that you don't go in and start to consult on the actual location of a line on that small piece of the farmer's property until the site has been selected, until prior to construction. So that we're not out meeting with hundreds of people about where the line might be sited if it might go on their property. This is only those farms that will be directly impacted, and they will now have what is most often a standard process, but now it'll be a statutory process that the utility has to go in and consult with them and deal with the specifics of that piece of property and the specifics of siting the line under that permit. So it's that sequencing, and I think is in section 2. After the route is approved by the siting authorities and before the construction of the transmission line begins, that's purposely there to narrow the number of people who are actually directly affected and have to go through this process of saying the line's going to be on my property. So with that, I'll pass it on to some of the other members here because there's no sense in us repeating all of the pieces of this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Gary Bauer with Northwest Natural. And as Mr. Gallagher just mentioned, the process of siting a linear facility is never easy. It's always very difficult. And it's very difficult because you do impact someone else's property. And you try throughout the process to communicate. It may not be perfect. As Mr. Gallagher said, you have a long siting process and a long permitting process. It may take 4 or 5 years before you actually get your permit. And so I think this bill does help, and it makes it clear that even after you've got your permit, go back again and make sure you've completed those conversations with the landowners. And we support that process. And anything we can do to continue to make communications better, we support. Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Excuse me, Mr. Chair, for the record, Tom O'Connor with Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities Association. I, too, was involved in, as I think both Tom and Gary as well, were involved in that 99 process of trying to reach a compromise on utility facility siting. I think it is important to us and hopefully important to you that to remember that we as utilities do have an obligation to serve. We must provide power to our customers so that when the light switch gets flipped, the power's there. We are also, as you well know, under increasing requirements to look for new sources of renewable energy, biomass, wind, solar, etc., many of which are found in rural areas. It is a compromise process to get that power to both the people in the rural areas and the people in the urban areas. The existing statute, I guess I should I'd like to point out, does require that the utility has to demonstrate in the siting process that the facility is necessary, that other reasonable alternatives have been considered, and there's a list of factors that you have to follow in order to site in exclusive farm use land. So there's some specific requirements for EFU. Once the facility is sited, there's also a requirement in existing statute that we be responsible for restoring as nearly as possible to its former condition any agricultural land and associated improvements that are damaged, otherwise disturbed by the siting, etc. This amendment doesn't change any of the existing public involvement requirements, any of these existing requirements that we have. It does add this new requirement to consult with the owner of the property in the final design of the facility. We think that codifies what should be and is good practice, and we're thank Representative Reed for helping us work through this, and this is something that we can work with.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't care whether Gary or Tom or anybody can answer this, but what happens if you go across a parcel of farmland that has multiple land use designations?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, you mean that it has it's EFU and it has other land use restrictions on it?
Let's say this is a very huge piece of property, and usually these lines are very, very long. I mean, they're going long distances. So I was just curious if portions are EFU, but other portions of the property were not.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, I would think, especially as you get outside of the valley, I would think that there are designated lands that are more arid, that aren't irrigated, they aren't all EFU. This provision, and as I recall from 1999, I recall from the three Supreme Court cases, originally siting of a transmission facility was an outright permitted use on EFU. There have been three Supreme Court cases that took a particular fact situation, and analyzing that fact situation, they came down to a final decision back in 1999 that essentially said you can only put it on EFU if there's no other place to put it. And part of that gets into, can you put it in the right-of-way? It's pretty hard to put a 20-foot base of a large 120-foot electrical transmission line in the right-of-way along a country road. So in 1999, and I believe you were here then, we went through a process of reworking through the statute and came up with these criteria that have been pulled out of the Supreme Court cases for that land that is EFU. And you still have to have the route, the site permit, which designates the route, done most of the time under FSAC. It could be under a county if it's a small line. It could be under a federal process in some other cases. You still have to have the permit to go in that direction. There are other than pieces like crossing water, which generates another part of the statute that you have to deal with. And if you are not crossing EFU, the question then I would think is, do we consult with those people? The answer is, I think every good siting process, and Gary could talk more about this because he's had the latest ones, does consult with all of those people. There are certain aspects of what you do on somebody's property who may not be high-value farmland. This particular amendment bill, the way it was drafted, really dealt only with high value. So my answer is we've codified best practices for high value, but those best practices will remain in existence for other pieces of property.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Berger.
I'll be brief. I don't know if maybe this is for Representative Reed, but reading on page 2, the new language, it says that the criteria of this section are met, a utility provider shall make a, quote, reasonable effort to locate utility transmission and distribution lines and the lines that have the least practical impact. Was there discussion in your committee about what a reasonable effort is, and do you guys have an understanding of what a reasonable effort is, and do the farmers involved have an idea what reasonable means in this case? Is it in statute somewhere?
Representative Berger, Mr. Chair, I think you've hit on a lot of the discussion and the difficulty. One person's definition of reasonable is often not the same as another's. So that is, I think, a large part of the reason that we went the direction of consult, so that there is at least a definition that people can objectively demonstrate or verify has occurred, and certainly be interested in these gentlemen's response as well.
Further discussion?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, from PGE's perspective, the problem with reasonable is it would require a separate kind of adjudication. What happens if one side makes it reasonable and then it isn't reasonable? Under the process, under the FSEC process, the only adjudication is condemnation, which is not where anybody wants to go in this kind of a situation. So we couldn't figure out how to deal with reasonable. We came back with the language on consult. Is it my understanding now there are at least three courses in every law school that define reasonable? And as a matter of fact, we have located some court decisions that define reasonable. And so parsing down what seems to be a word that, how can you be unreasonable? We don't have an unreasonable process.
Quick follow-up. So the dash, you then prefer the dash five amendments with the term consult. That seems to be the operative. That's all I'm trying to hurry for the chair's sake. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions of this panel? Thank you all. Our last two people who signed up, Danielle, is it Willever? I hope I got that reasonably close. And Sean Cleave.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee, my name is Danielle Welliver, and I am the Legislative Affairs Director of 4000 Friends of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of HB 3153. The A-engrossed version of the bill is a small step forward in creating a better balance between farmers and utilities that site in the exclusive farm use zone. We anticipate an amendment to the engrossed version of the bill that, if adopted, would make a modest change in the relationship between utility providers and farmers to encourage more communication when siting a utility facility on a piece of property. We support this amendment. Existing requirements appear to encourage fair use of EFU lands when siting utility facilities, yet the agricultural community continues to be challenged by the threat of pipelines and transmission lines being routed through their places of business when other feasible options are available. It costs agricultural producers the necessary time, aggravation, and money to site utility facilities on farmland without first adjusting routes to better protect existing operations. We can be proud in Oregon that over 99% of the farms are family-owned businesses. Agriculture accounts for over 10% of the employment in this state and generates about $5 billion in sales annually. This stay in Oregon industry pays dividends to all Oregonians year after year. Better protections for family farmers can be achieved without creating impossible hurdles for siting utility facilities. In Friends of Parent Mountain versus Northwest Natural Gas Company, the Oregon Supreme Court rejected the Oregon Farm Bureau's contention that utilities should site their facility routes and segments under ORS 215-275. The Farm Bureau had argued that for segmentation based on properties in order to better protect the needs of the farming community. The court held that a pipeline was not composed of segments in a manner similar to, in their example, a water treatment facility, and therefore there was no occasion to consider distinct segments. The Farm Bureau petitioners also argued that utilities should be sited in road right-of-ways in the EFU zone whenever possible to minimize disturbance of farm operations. However, the court found that since roads are allowed in EFU zones, they were not legally distinguishable from land in active farmland production. Therefore, pipelines should not be limited to certain parts of EFU land. The practical problems with this interpretation continues to plague the agricultural utility relationship. Two changes would better protect agriculture and continue to allow utilities to be sited. First, road right-of-ways can and should be distinguished from land in agricultural production under ORS 215-275. The law can state a preference to site pipelines in road right-of-ways which would limit the amount of farmland that is taken out of production or restriction that's on farm uses due to the presence of a utility facility. Second, the utility facility route should be determined based on an analysis of the site and situation of the land in segments rather than committing an entire pipeline or transmission facility route on an analysis of a small portion of the land along that route. The court in Parrot Mountain focused only on the physical characteristics of the utility, leaving aside the question of uses of the existing land. Both the needs of the agricultural producers and utilities should be taken into account when citing utilities in the EFU zone. These are the changes we hope the legislature will consider this session. We support 3153A engrossed as amended and respectfully ask for your support for this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Sean.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sean Cleave, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. The Oregon Farm Bureau stands in full support of House Bill 3153 with the -A5 amendments. After being with the Farm Bureau for over nearly 2 years now, I will tell you that there is no other issue that rises to the tips of the tongues of Farm Bureau members other than utility sightings. Unfortunately, we're in a situation, and the previous speakers hit on this earlier, that farmland becomes the path of least resistance when weighed against a variety of other factors. House Bill 3153 with the A5 amendments, thanks to Rep. Reed's leadership, bring us one step closer to codifying what we consider best practices. And with that, I'll wrap up my testimony and open to any questions the committee might have.
Any questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That ends the list of people to testify on House Bill 3153A. So we're going to close the public hearing. Is there anyone else that I didn't see that got sent up? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3153A. We're going to hold on. And I'm now going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3058. We'll have a short explanation by our administrator. And just so people know, I have had conversations with both the proponents and the opponents, and we have some panels that are going to be first. And so we'll have the proponents first, then we'll have the opponents in that group, and then we'll have the general public. So just so people know, work that out ahead of time, trying to get this to go as smoothly as we can. So with that, short explanation.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. House Bill 3058 changes the definition of applicant for purposes of the removal fill permitting program administered by the Department of State Lands to include persons other than landowners or their representatives, as well as other provisions. The proposed -17 amendments replace the measure, define circumstances when the director of the Department of State Lands can issue permits for removal or fill activity for construction of a linear facility, adds a process to notify certain landowners of the permit, and delineates a process to protest the issued permit to the director, defines who can apply for removal or fill activity, declares an emergency, takes effect on passage. Oregon's removal fill law, which is ORS 196.775-990, requires people who plan to remove or fill material in waters of the state to obtain a permit from the Department of State Lands. The purpose of the 1967 law is to protect navigation, fisheries, and recreational use of the waters. Waters of the state are defined as natural waterways, including all tidal and non-tidal bays, intermittent streams, constantly flowing streams, lakes, wetlands, or other bodies of water in this state, navigable and non-navigable, including that portion of the Pacific Ocean that is in the boundaries of this state. The law applies to all landowners, including private individuals and public agencies.
Do we have some amendments?
We have a -17 amendment, which is roughly what I described.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I wanted to make sure. With that, we're going to call up Director Louis Soliday, Tom Chamberlain, and Jay Clemens. Louise.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Louise Soliday, Director of the Oregon Department of State Lands. The Dash 17 amendments to House Bill 3058 that you have in front of you do several things, and I might just walk through quickly. Section 1 provides that if we issue a permit to someone who is not a landowner, that person may not engage in the removal fill activities on that parcel until they either are the landowner, have the permission of the landowner, or have an order or judgment from a court authorizing the use of that property. Section 1 also requires that the director notify all the landowners whose land is affected. We currently have in our statutes we notify adjacent landowners. In this case, we would be notifying landowners who are directly affected as well as those adjacent to the proposed projects. Section 1 also provides an opportunity for a contested case hearing for any person who is aggrieved or adversely affected by the issuance of the permit. Section 1 on page 4 also requires us to hold a public hearing if we get a request for a public hearing from 10 or more property owners who are affected by the application in front of us. Section 1 on page 5 modifies the definition of an applicant to include a person who is proposing a removal fill activity for a linear facility. And then on Section 1 also on page 6 defines a linear facility as including any railway, highway, road, pipeline, communication line, power line, or similar facility used for transporting people, goods, or substances, or the transmission of energy. And then finally, there's some conforming amendments, and then if you skip to page 13, section 6 and 7 provide a provision that this would only affect applications that are submitted to us on or after the effective date, and it includes an emergency clause. The bill does not affect any of the substantive review criteria that we use to review these projects. Those remain the same in our statutes, and it does not affect other parts of our permit processing activities. I do want to just talk briefly about the history of this definition of applicant that's in our statute, which has caused problems for linear facilities. That provision was first added to our statute back in 2001. It went into effect in the middle of 2002, and it was part of Senate Bill 529 in 2001, which is a bill that added the statutory timelines for us to process our permit applications and did some other things. And it was a bill that was requested by the Association of Realtors. And I think one of the issues that they were making sure that sellers of property who had permit applications submitted for them had, were in fact notifying potential buyers about potential impacts from these sorts of projects. I think one of the unintended consequences of this, that change that took place in 2001, is that linear projects are now in a situation where they cannot even submit an application to us because they, until they are the owner of the property or have the permission of the permission of the landowner. And for us, that puts them at the back end of a siting process as opposed to in the front end of the siting process. And for us, as folks who are charged with the responsibility for protecting the water resources of the state and making sure that they are protected for purposes of navigation, commerce, fisheries, and recreation, we would prefer that those applications come in the door at the front end of the process instead of the back end of the process so that we can work with the folks who are proposing these facilities to make sure that they are selecting a route that is going to avoid and minimize impacts to waters of the state to the extent that that is practical. And so the Dash 7, we worked with Legislative Council and others on the Dash 17 amendments. We think that they are workable. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I'm assuming you want to hear from everybody first.
Thanks. Chair Roblin and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jay Clemens. I'm the president of Associated Oregon Industries, testifying in support of House Bill 3058. House Bill 3058 is about creating jobs in Oregon's job retention and creation is AOI's top priority. Passage of this bill will ensure important public works projects such as roads, highways, rail lines, and underground utilities are not delayed because they can't meet legal definition of the word applicant to apply for a key permit. Without this bill, vital public works projects could be delayed because they wouldn't be able to apply for a fill removal permit without the permission of all potentially affected landowners. These are large capital-intensive projects that frequently employ hundreds of people at a time, paying good wages, often for several years of construction on transportation and energy infrastructure needed by our society and by our economy. House Bill 3058 with the Dash 17 amendments would allow entities that are already have eminent domain authority to apply for removal fill permits. In addition, once the Department of State Lands issues a removal fill permit, construction activity would be limited to property that linear projects either own, have landowner permission to use, or for which they have been granted an easement through a court order. This does not adversely change landowner rights. It would still require government entities and utilities to complete eminent domain, if necessary, before they could build on properties for which they do not have permission. AOI is particularly concerned that projects such as roads and highways could be delayed if this issue isn't addressed. This is critical at a time when the state needs to get people back to work. House Bill 3058 is also necessary to ensure that building underground utilities is not delayed. As Oregon continues to grow, its utility infrastructure must be able to grow with it to ensure that we have the services and energy that homes and businesses need. A reliable and affordable supply of energy, including natural gas, is critical to Oregon's economy. It will take decades for renewable energy to be able to meet a significant portion of Oregon's energy needs. Natural gas will be needed to bridge the gap and firm up wind and solar energy resources, which are intermittent. Oregon industries that are large consumers of natural gas include technology companies, manufacturers, food processors, pulp and paper, and others. These are industries that together employ tens of thousands of Oregonians. Energy affordability and reliability is absolutely critical to them. House Bill 3058 is needed to help ensure Oregon's permitting process works efficiently while continuing to protect landowner rights. This bill is about protecting and creating jobs. It's about efficiency. It's about putting people back to work. And AOI urges your support. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Tom Chamberlain, and I'm the president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, representing almost a quarter of a million working families across the state of Oregon. We're in tough times, no doubt about it, and you all are facing it every single day. So are my members. And I'm going to talk about three categories of workers that are really hard hit: folks in the wood products industry, folks in manufacturing, and folks in construction. Folks in construction and those other two categories of workers, their unemployment is approaching 30%. Anything that we put in the way of projects that put my folks back to work, like roads and highways, utilities, are projects that they're so needed at this time that we have to move forward. And we see the current law, without the passage of 3058 and as amended, as a major stumbling block to put those projects through. It's going to be years before we get the energy we need to impact the manufacturing sector. But we have to start thinking about that, and we need to have legislation like this so we can start moving forward with a means to move good, cheap energy throughout Oregon. We urge your support.
Any questions, Representative Garrard?
You always look down here first.
I always do.
Really appreciate it. A question and then a comment, if you'll allow. Louise, a question for you. If somebody objected to the land having fill removal activity done on it, would this bill allow applicants to conduct fill removal on their land without having to go through a completed eminent domain proceeding?
Mr. Chair and Representative Garrard, that it would not.
Okay. And the comment, Mr. Chair, is it's nice to see you two gentlemen here agreeing with each other. So.
We agree on many things. Jobs first.
Jobs first.
And I did have a question for Louise, because I introduced a project with Representative Krieger on a highway from Coos Bay to Ontario. I like the project. Other people may not, but I like the project. Would this bill have an impact on the ability to do that project if we don't have this bill?
Mr. Chair, because that is a linear project, it would need the whoever was building, constructing that project and needed a removal fill permit from us would not be able to even apply for that removal fill permit under existing law until they were the landowner or had the permission of all the landowners along the route.
So that's the whole route. So they couldn't start even getting the permit until they had had acquisition or permission for the whole 1,000 miles of my road.
Mr. Chair, as long as it was not a road to nowhere, they could probably get a permit for sections of the road that were going from one point to another without needing it. But they would, again, within that section, would still need the permission of the landowner or landowner for that section.
Okay. Thank you. That's how I understood that, too. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Edwards.
So, what defines a section? You said a section. I mean, I'm thinking about high-speed rail down the Willamette Valley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Edwards, that's oftentimes defined by the project proponent. So they come to us with a proposal for a project. It may cover many miles. It may cover what we look at is we have to look at the purpose and need for the project. So if the project is less than what I'd call a full project, we would need to see the full project in front of us to permit as opposed to a part of a project. If the various components of the project are dependent on each other, and I guess, for instance, if someone wanted to develop a water line, but they didn't have a source of water to put in that pipeline, we would not find that there's a need for that project without having water to run in that line. So that's what I mean by it depends on what the project is that's in front of us.
Thank you. Further questions? Seeing none. Thank you very much. And I'm going to ask this because I like to be as fair. You guys can head back. Would you like to go three and three each time or all together?
Whatever your pleasure.
I think it's nice. Let's just go one group and then we'll have another group. That'll work. Thank you very much. So our next three would be Ray Hemingway and our ODOT person, who I'm trying to remember the name because they were in a different place. Amy Joyce, thank you. And then we'll start with the other panel.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Roy Hemingway. I am representing the Jordan Cove Energy Project and the Pacific Connector Gas Pipeline. The Pacific Connector Gas Pipeline would be constructed and operated by the Williams Company. If you burn natural gas in Western Oregon, you get your gas through a Williams pipeline. I feel I have to take some responsibility for the situation we're in that I was on the governor's staff in 2001 reviewing natural resources legislation, just as was Louise, and we missed the implication of the requirement for landowner approval before applying for a DSL permit. We certainly didn't, it just never came to anyone's consciousness that this might hold up linear projects for literally years as a result of this new requirement. And so we're here to correct that situation today. I just want to do a little show and tell here to start off. These are maps of the entire route of the Pacific Connector gas pipeline, all 230-some miles of it from Coos Bay to Malin. And it shows where the land, the pipeline would go, where the work areas would be, and there are other maps that show individual landowners. And pipeline people have been working with landowners to locate this pipeline for several years. In fact, this booklet is dated January 1, 2007. Now, these are the maps that go into the federal permitting process, and this process has been ongoing for a couple of years without any landowner approval requirement. So it's not as if this is something new that is being asked for here. I think our biggest regret about this process right now is that the permitting process takes so long that we are not able to get to the stage of talking with landowners about a dollar amount offered for their land until all the permits are acquired. And so this may, if this bill is not passed, that probably puts us off another year or two before we are talking with landowners about what money they might be able to expect. It also means that there would be an increasing likelihood that that the company would need to use eminent domain to acquire property. Now, eminent domain is very unpopular with landowners. It's actually quite unpopular with utilities because it creates bad relationships, it creates uncertainty, it takes extra time, and it pays lawyers rather than landowners. And pipelines they're going to be there for 50 years or more. They'd much rather have good relationships with landowners than create bad relationships with eminent domain. And so sitting down with landowners and talking with them about the value of their land and where the pipeline should go is something that at least the Williams Company does on a routine basis. And having to hurry up to get to acquisition through, and probably having to do that through eminent domain, isn't in anybody's interest. The reason this bill is so important right now, at least to pipeline companies, is that we are running short of natural gas in Oregon. Canadian supplies are diminishing, and when they've been our traditional supplier. And so there are, right now, for good reason, four separate major new pipeline proposals in Oregon. And there haven't been new pipeline proposals in Oregon for a couple of decades or more. Two of those pipelines connect LNG facilities, and we know those are controversial, but two of those do not, and they're equally affected by this bill. Two of those proposed pipelines would bring gas in from the Rockies. That's the Ruby Pipeline across southern Oregon and the Sunstone Pipeline from the Idaho border to Stanfield. So this isn't an LNG bill, and it's not just a pipeline bill, but I can talk about the pipeline impacts, and it's not simply about LNG at all.
I'm going to ask you to kind of narrow it down, because we've got a timeline.
I'm basically done. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation, and I have with me Hal Gard, who's ODOT's manager of our geoenvironmental section. House Bill 3058 with the -17 amendment would assist ODOT in running highway projects more efficiently. Under current law, ODOT would only meet the definition of applicant after right-of-way acquisition is completed. And in the absence of having right-of-way complete, ODOT is not able to apply for a permit unless the property owner signs. We get those signatures, and that's not always feasible in the event of a lengthy right-of-way negotiation. So the bill with the -17 amendments would allow ODOT to submit an application for removal fill permits from DSL earlier in project development before right-of-way acquisition is complete, and this would allow earlier formal input both from the regulatory community and from the public community. It allows the right-of-way acquisition process to run concurrently with the DSL permitting process. And without the proposed legislation, under the current law, where we need a DSL permit and and right-of-way negotiations are lengthy, it will result in highway project delay. The later an application for a DSL permit is submitted, becomes the risk goes up for having to do rework should the regulatory or the public involvement that exists within that permitting process require design changes. So the bill with the Dash 17 amendments will help the department to more efficiently and cost-effectively deliver highway projects. That's all I have, and Hal is available for the more technical permitting questions if you have them, and I can do what I can on right-of-way issues.
Any questions? I probably should have saved my question about my highway from Coos Bay to Ontario for you guys, but we've already had the answer, so I'm not going to take extra time to do that. But you concur with the previous deal about my highway? It would take a little longer?
Chair Roland, I suspect that it would,
okay,
yes.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Any other questions of this panel? Thank you for being here. So next I have Chuck, Representative Chuck Riley, David Ford, and Dave Kirkshank, is that right, from Yamhill County Farm Bureau.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. For the record, Chuck Riley, State Representative for Hillsborough, Corneas, and Forest Grove. First thing I want to say is the Dash 15, 17 amendments are a big step forward. They're a big improvement. My main concern, I want to make it clear, is the rights of the landowner. And I still have a few concerns with the Dash 17. And the main concern is the fact that the 196-600, which is about wetlands and state waterways that this refers to, were all the appeal processes in that statute assume that the landowner is the only one who can get a permit. It's designed, as was stated earlier, to protect the state waterways and wetlands from the landowner. It's not designed to protect it from anyone else because they're the only ones who can get the permit. There's nothing in those statutes anywhere which protects the landowner. The assumption is the landowner is the permit applicant, so there's nothing in there to protect the landowner. Under this new proposal, when the landowner is not the permit applicant, he does have an appeal process, but that the only valid reasons for that appeal under the current statutes and 7-17 are harm to state waterways or wetlands. That's the only way that that is allowed. That's the only allowable reason for bringing an appeal under the statute. This has no protection for anything else that the landowner feels is a problem. The process of taking out an application on someone else's land, if it's going to be approved and the landowner ultimately agrees, it's not a problem. The problem is, number one, if it's disapproved, the appeal process for a disapproved application, again, assumes that it was a landowner who made the application and therefore is trying to do something with his land. This new process gives someone else that appeal process and ties up that landowner's land for as long as they want to keep going through the appeal process, which can go through state lands, then to the circuit court, and ultimately the Supreme Court. My biggest concern is not to, I don't want to stop jobs. I want these things to go through when they should go through. But when they're not approved, the appeal process can take up the landowner's time forever. And I think that's a serious problem. One other piece, and that's on page 291, a court order or judgment authorizing the use of the property. I'm not quite sure what that means. You know, Section B there says that if they take interest in the title or interest in the property, which I assume means condemnation, either purchase or condemnation, and I don't know what a court order, a court judgment could be about other than condemnation. So that concerns me a little bit because it seems to me that under this small c, line one on page three, page two, a court could say, you can go ahead and start doing work. Yeah, that's what it says. And I'm concerned about that. So those are my main concerns. I don't want to take up a lot of time. I will let other people go ahead with that.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Ford.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. My name is David Ford. I'm here wearing two hats today. One, I'm a private forest landowner in Yamhill County. I'm also here today, however, representing the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. I'm their executive director. We represent 3,000 family forest landowners across the state. I'm here today in opposition of this bill because primarily it's an issue of private property rights, as representative next to me just articulated, and I support many of the things that he said here. This first and foremost, I guess it should be very, very difficult to take private lands. And our landowners who have worked and have, and many of these lands have been in their families for generations, are very concerned about their lands being taken. And recognizing that on certain of these issues, there's federal control, not state control. And listening to the testimony before we had a chance to come up to the podium, I learned a little bit more about some of the at least problems that were identified by some of the agencies. And some of the folks like the pipeline folks that indicate that they need the permits before they can go out and start talking to landowners. I'm not quite sure why you need a permit in your hand to go out and begin a dialogue with landowners. You don't need a permit to do that. You can call me up or come knock on my door, and I'd be happy to talk to you. I do know that some of the drafts, the Dash 17 amendments, or amendment has a few problems around notification. For example, one is the notification should be by first class mail. So we would rather see notifications where we actually have a responsibility to be able to communicate back rather than just presume we got the piece of mail before they move forward. I think part of, at least representing our members, a number of them are concerned not about your road, Mr. Chairman, or some of the other electrical utility lines. They are very concerned about the LNG pipeline issues, particularly in Washington, Yamhill counties, where I own land. And so one suggestion that was offered by several of our members was, well, maybe we should just amend this bill to allow ODOT to exempt LNG pipelines instead of the linear utilities, and that might resolve a lot of the controversy around this particular bill. But the other point that I wanted to make briefly is that as forest landowners, we also support jobs, and our interest is seeing Oregon move towards energy independence, not continued dependence on energy coming from foreign sources, particularly those that are fossil-based rather than renewable energy sources. As family landowners, we have a lot of biomass on our properties. We have serious fire issues as well. We would love to see jobs created that are long-term jobs in rural communities to help with biomass, and we think that's a natural option that forest family landowners would allow them to keep their lands in family forest and increase their financial opportunities to manage those lands over time. So we're not against jobs at all in this situation, but we are very concerned about our ability to be able to maintain our land and find ways to access new markets that will provide a reliable, renewable source of energy for this state in the future. And I know several of the Oregon Small Woodlands members are here today. Some of them may testify as well that can give you more perspective from the local chapters. Thank you.
Chairman Roblin and committee members, my name is David Kirkshank. I'm testifying on behalf of myself, my wife Doris, Yamhill County Farm Bureau, as a board member. We live in the Dayton area. We are third-generation owners of a small, diversified mid-Willamette Valley farm that will be directly impacted by two proposed liquid natural gas pipelines associated with the proposed LNG terminals on the Columbia River. One pipeline will cross our property on a bias for approximately a quarter mile. The second will cross longitudinally for a mile, coming within 100 feet of a farm residence. Yamhill County Farm Bureau adopted the following at the May 12, 2009 board meeting. We are testifying to express our strong opposition to House Bill 3058, which would allow corporations promoting liquid natural gas terminals and related pipelines to obtain wetland fill permits for private property over the objection of property owners. This precedent-setting bill will apply to linear utility and transportation projects and would be the first we know of it in Oregon where a private corporation or government entity would be able to apply for and receive a state permit for property they have no rights to use or access. This misguided bill is clearly intended to fast-track permitting of proposed LNG terminals and related pipelines. Over 600 miles of LNG-related pipelines are proposed in Oregon, and the passage of House Bill 3058 would immediately trigger a deluge of applications to the Department of State Lands for permits on private property. Hundreds of Oregon farmers are directly impacted by proposed LNG-related pipelines, and House Bill 3058 would increase the burden on Oregon farmers, allowing energy companies to seek permits for pipelines that they will likely never be needed or built. Even with additional provisions for landowner notification, House Bill 3058 would still result in private property rights being infringed upon when private companies seek permits on private land they do not own or control. House Bill 3058 would result in the taking of landowners' rights prior to the use of eminent domain and without adequate public process in absence of a proven need for these projects. The resulting rush of unnecessary, unwanted permits on Oregon farms will negatively impact agriculture throughout the state. This bill is entirely at odds with Oregon's efforts to promote agriculture, a backbone of Yamhill County economy. In 2008, Yamhill County ranked 8th in the state for agriculture with sales of $284 million. House Bill 3058 was proposed by Northern Star, a Texas energy company pushing to build an LNG terminal on the Columbia as a way of allowing them to obtain wetland fill permits for property before they had received eminent domain authority from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Regardless of whether you are for or against LNG or related pipelines, the precedent of allowing a private entity to receive state regulatory permits on property they do not own sets a dangerous precedent. We strongly urge you to oppose this bill. Thank you for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you all for being here. Next, we have Kathleen Carl, Ivan Milicic. I always say that wrong. Ivan is in the back. And Evan Manvel.
Chair Roblon and representatives. My name is Kathleen Carl. I'm part of a farm family in the Hubbard area. I'm here today, though, representing Marion County Farm Bureau. And we strongly oppose House Bill 3058. We have serious concerns about a bill that would allow private pipeline companies to obtain wetland fill permits without the consent of the property owners. Currently, Oregon only allows a landowner or someone with permission from the landowner for fill or removal on private wetlands. This bill is prompted by the wrong ideals. Allowing a private corporation to receive a state permit on property which they have no right to use. It's faster and cheaper for LNG companies, but it provides fewer property rights for landowners who could also suffer economic hardships. This bill could cause an increased burden on the operations of Oregon farmers. While the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, is still in the permitting process for the LNG terminals and pipelines. As you've heard, there's more than 600 miles of proposed pipelines of LNG pipelines in four different projects. And the FERC looks at these each individually, does not look at them as a whole thing. So that means that Oregon should take a measured, careful approach to this permitting process. Such a bill like House Bill 3058 makes it a hurried process with an overwhelming flood of permits for the Department of State Lands. Agriculture is Marin County's number one industry, number one, with over $500 million every year. Two pipelines go through the heart of this prime farmland. And those of us that have been involved with this pipeline going through our land, or these pipelines, have seen the line flip-flop back and forth. So we go to one meeting and, oh no, you're not in Palomar, you're in Oregon Pipeline, so you go to another meeting. So a farmer has to deal with multiple permits from two different companies. Unwanted wetland fill work on farms, moreover, could badly impact agriculture in Marin County and throughout Oregon. People talk about jobs, but farmers are providing jobs. We are currently providing money for this state, and we are providing jobs for them. House Bill 3058 would result in the taking of our rights prior to the authority from FERC and without a reasoned, adequate public process. This bill erodes our private property rights and is unnecessary. While recognizing the need for energy, Marin County Farm Bureau believes the pipeline permitting process must be fair to the citizens of this state. We strongly advocate that you oppose this bill. And I would like to point out that I think that there are more than two LNG sites, as the Williams man spoke. I think there's more than that. Just commenting on previous. So are there any questions?
Thank you. We'll wait till the whole panel, and then we'll come back. Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ivan Maluski. I'm the conservation coordinator for the Oregon Chapter Sierra Club. And maybe I shouldn't testify here. I believe the Oregon Small Woodlot Owners Association, Yamhill County Farm Bureau, and Marion County Farm Bureau essentially delivered our testimony, and we strongly support the sentiments they've expressed here. I think it's important to put this in context. The context here is that several companies, including some from out of state, have proposed LNG terminals and several hundred miles of pipelines across Oregon. That's really the context here. You know, our 20,000 members across the state have strong concerns about the environmental impacts of LNG terminals and pipelines. We believe that this is essentially going to fast track this proposal or these proposals. There may be some issues as the DSL brought up around some of the other types of linear projects, but I think that again the context here is the LNG issue before us. So if you aren't willing to necessarily stop this bill in its tracks as is, we'd urge you to essentially amend out LNG as being eligible for these expedited permit rules. Oregon already has numerous roads, power lines, and pipelines that have been constructed across public and private lands under current rules. I don't believe any evidence was brought forward earlier today that says that we haven't built any new roads since 2001 or we haven't built any new transmission lines since 2001. I just don't think that's the case. We believe that 3058, as it pertains to LNG pipelines, essentially puts the finger on the scale for LNG companies who are seeking to get wetland removal fill permits. And essentially, under this bill, the Division of State Lands could issue some sort of conditional permit or even a final permit that could be used against private landowners during the eminent domain proceedings. The environmental impacts of hundreds of miles of proposed LNG pipelines would be significant for Oregon, causing damage to rivers, streams, fish, farms, and forests across the state. In order to protect the public interest, companies seeking permits for pipelines should be held up to rigorous environmental standards, and the state should not grant its removal fill permits easily or hastily. We believe that importing LNG into Oregon is a bad decision on many levels and would ultimately serve to benefit states like California that have already prevented these types of terminals in their states. Oregon would see few benefits but would be saddled with significant costs to both our environment and to landowners who would lose value of their land during this pipeline development. So we urge you to oppose this bill as written today, and thanks for your time.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Evan Manville,
testifying on behalf of the Oregon League of Conservation Voters and Oregon Conservation Network, which is a coalition of over 40 environmental groups representing over 100,000 Oregonians. My eyes glaze over a little bit in talking about removal fill and court orders and this sort of thing, and what's the outcome of this bill going to be? And the outcome is it's going to be easier to build facilities in Oregon that exacerbate the climate change problem. That's one of the outcomes of the bill if adopted as written or as under the DAS 17. Just yesterday, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology released a study that found that climate change is roughly twice as bad as we thought before. They did the most comprehensive modeling of climate change yet and found we're likely to increase temperatures globally by 9 degrees Fahrenheit by 2100. How do you say that? Yeah, by the 23rd century, I guess. 22nd century. Thank you. But we have a choice. We have a choice. If we act, we can prevent that future. Your August body in 2007 explained how important climate change is. You said global warming poses a serious threat to the economic well-being, public health, natural resources, and environment of Oregon. Again, a serious threat, economic well-being, public health, natural resources, and environment of Oregon. You stated in the law you passed, global warming have detrimental effects on many of Oregon's largest industries. And there are significant benefits of acting to fight climate change. You all understand climate change. You understand the importance of it. What does LNG do if we decide to help them build? It locks us into a carbon-intensive future. We've heard earlier these pipelines exist for 50 years or more. You can't. This isn't a 5 or 10 year decision. This is going to have impacts for decades. And LNG proponents themselves had noted that LNG is significantly more polluting than domestic natural gas. We're not sure that we need domestic gas. There are some studies we could do it with conservation and renewable energy. But if we're choosing, let's choose between LNG and domestic. Let's help domestic and not help LNG. Helping LNG also undermines our investment in renewable energy and the state's ability to build a clean energy future. If we're helping another force compete, our renewables are undermined. We support an amendment to this bill that would remove the LNG provision or make this process not available for LNG. And I guess I would conclude by saying, when you're in a hole, stop digging. We are in a very deep hole on climate change, and House Bill 3058 is a shovel. I urge you not to pick it up. Thank you so much for your time, for your service to Oregon, for your thoughtful consideration of this legislation. Thank you.
Any questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you all for being here. The last person on that side of the list was Paul Sansom. And there's other people, but I'll let them finish, and then I'll start bringing other people who have signed up.
Chair Roblin, representatives, as a retired energy executive who have developed many large-scale energy projects, and I've given you my resume, talks about hundreds of millions of dollars of projects that I've developed. As a former planner for the city of Forest Grove, as a member of Oregon Citizens Against the Pipeline, Forest Grove chapter, I know that House Bill 3058 is not necessary, and it hurts private property rights. Taking private property for public purpose must be hard. It's the fundamental way that we protect our rights. It is the duty of the legislature to act as a regulator on the actions of the state government agencies. It is very easy for the regulators to become too close to the regulated, and I think we saw that today. For nearly a decade, the current law has functioned fine. It was not until the arrival of the LNG proposals that the developers in the Department of State Lands found the need for 3058. The attached letter, and I'm giving you a copy of it, written by Broadwood Landing to the Department of State Lands 2 years ago, is documentation of why this bill has been submitted. If it hasn't, again, we urge the simple amendment to take out LNG facilities from this fast track. Nothing prevents Bradwood Landing to confer with the Department of State Lands on a pre-proposal basis to gain the information necessary to do preliminary planning. It's done every day. I've developed many energy projects. After the developers and the Department of State Lands have determined a proper pipeline alignment with the least amount of impact, Bradwood Landing can go through the eminent domain process and apply for permits. Nothing to stop them from talking to landowners. And I must point out that all the protections that you talked about in the earlier bill did not exist for us with LNG pipelines. This whole process, if it was run through the state facility siting process, would not be having these problems that are here today. We have been railroaded. We have been intimidated. We have been trespassed on. It's all been documented. Senator Wyden wrote a letter. Congressman Wu wrote a letter. Governor Kulongowski wrote a letter. So a lot of the problems that we have here today is because you're getting a flawed federal process dumped into your laps. If we'd just gone through the state process, we would have been properly notified and dealt with. That hasn't happened. This is the way most projects proceed. At Bradwood Landing is a speculative process. It has every incentive to take shortcuts and get any approval they can. Remember, Northern Star will not be building and operating Bradwood Landing. The project, once approved, will be sold. And the buyer will then have to be responsible for implementing the details. It is to their incentive to just push this thing through. And if you look on the ground, and we've taken the governor's staff out and looked at it, you can see that they're just pushing this thing through. They go directly through landslides from the 2007 flood. In the 2000 and the 96 floods, there's super saturation zones that these pipelines go straight through. There's no way they're going to stay in the ground. These proponents don't care. They just want to get their approval so they can resell the process. What's happening is that we're going to get all the problems dumped onto us, onto the state. So the last thing we need is an expedited LNG process. There's supposed to be a conflict claimed by Bradwood Landing in attaining their coastal zone management permit, and it is easily resolved under current law. Bradwood Landing has their FERC land, their license. The Department of State Land, DLCD, has the authority to issue a conditional permit if necessary. With this conditional permit, Bradwood Landing could obtain permissions through eminent domain. So there's nothing to stop them to go forward under current law with LNG. So if there's a problem with the Oregon Department of Transportation, if there's a problem with your road, Chair Roblin, amend this bill. Take out the LNG portion of it, and we don't have problems with it. LNG developers are seeking to compress the process to gain advantage in the flawed LNG development process set in motion by the federal 2005 Energy Act. Developers gain market advantage over competing proposals, and this creates the incentive to pass the problems off onto the companies that will actually own and build these facilities and off to the state of Oregon. The 2005 Energy Act also gave the states, and this is Wyden who helped us with this, gave the states the ability to protect our public interest through the Clean Air, Clean Water, and Coastal Zone Management Act. HB 3058 guts that portion of that protection. Nothing is gained for the citizens of Oregon in passing HB 3058 as written, and much is put at risk. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this witness? You know, in the earlier test, I'll ask one. In the earlier testimony, I heard that what happens then if we don't do this is that it forces them to go after eminent domain sooner so that they can have the project so they can go after the permit.
What's happening is they're trying to compress the preliminary process and the final process. Normally what happens when you do a linear utility, you take a 4 or 5 mile corridor and you lay that out. And you go to the Department of State Lands, you go to all the different agencies, and you see where the problems are. You hone it down to a final proposal, and at that point you get eminent domain and you go and you negotiate with customers, with private landowners. What they're trying to do is compress the two into one. And it's only happening because they want to move forward to get a competitive advantage, one process over the other.
Any other questions for this? Thank you. Thank you very much. Now I have to go because all these people were nice enough to sign up as well as have my list, so I've got to check them off. So Barbara Wilson.
Another bill.
Okay. Ivan Vistica. Is that right?
Pretty good.
Thank you. And Sam Sweeney.
Chairman Roblin and Vice Chair Representative Berger and Vice Chair Chris Edwards, thank you for allowing me to speak today. I am Barbara Wilson and I live in Beaverton. I am the chairperson of a conservation group called Friends of Mount Hood, and we have been in existence since 1989. Our mission statement speaks to the conservation of Mount Hood and the Mount Hood National Forest. And we became involved in the LNG controversy because we learned that the Palomar pipeline would be built between Malala and Eastern Oregon, where the Trans-Canada gas pipeline goes to California. The devastation and total destruction of a path 47 miles wide and a minimum of 120 feet through the forest over thousands of mountain creeks and streams, including the many, many times over the wild and scenic Clackamas River, alarmed us considerably. And when we began to investigate further, we realized that we needed to oppose LNG, Bradwood Landing, and the Palomar Pipeline. To begin, I have been to two or three hearings regarding LNG, and I hear a statement, and it was mentioned here by the person from Williams Pipeline Company, and he was saying that Oregon has insufficient quantities of natural gas. I have a website link, which I'll email to you when I get home tonight, that indicates a study was done in 2008 by the Department of Energy, and we have a supply for 119 years for natural gas, domestic natural gas, and in addition, British Columbia, which is selling natural gas to Oregon now, has sufficient supplies for 100 years. So I don't know whether my source is incorrect or the person who was sitting here is incorrect, but that needs to be resolved. Do we have sufficient natural gas domestically or don't we? I think this is a really important question to ask, because when you're talking about eminent domain and condemning people's property, we need to know, are they giving of their property or being condemned for something that will genuinely benefit the public? Do we need this? And federal law doesn't require that, apparently, for gas lines. So we need to know more about this. It troubles me greatly that Bradwood Landing wrote a letter, and it was referenced earlier by Paul Sasson, on March 30th, 2007, asking for our laws to be expanded so that a definition of applicant would include a person that was not an owner and didn't have approval of the owner to acquire land for removal or fill activity. And they asked the Oregon legislature to do this. The letter was to Department of State Lands. And then this bill comes out 3058, and my goodness, what they've requested is in the bill. And somehow I feel that the Oregon State Legislature needs to serve the people of Oregon. And when the environmental costs of LNG are so great that the people of Oregon should be considered first before a Texas energy company submits a request and has their request included in a House bill.
We're going to ask you to kind of close,
yes.
Summarize, so
okay.
Thanks.
I am a pro-union person. I want people to have jobs. I don't want anyone to ever think that I don't care that the unemployment rate is so high. But I'm not convinced that the price that we have to pay for this Texas Energy Company, I think it's too high to provide temporary jobs for folks. Please keep in mind that the state of Oregon turned down LNG terminals because of environmental concerns, and yet much of this foreign LNG coming from Russia and Iran and these faraway places, this LNG will be sent down the pipeline to California users. Now, that doesn't make any sense to me at all. I think probably the rest of my testimony has been pretty much covered by others, so I won't repeat that, but please understand that LNG terminals and pipelines will significantly damage our agricultural economy, our forests, our small timberlands, our rivers, and our climates. In the Columbia River, to put that terminal in requires the removal of 400,000 cubic feet of dirt off the bottom of the Columbia River, which will destroy an estuary where small salmon have lived for millions of years. And I cannot believe that it's worth it. I can't believe it's worth it. And when those tankers come in and they get rid of their LNG, then they'll use a billion gallons of water out of the Columbia to use that as ballast. And once again, baby salmon are scooped up into those tankers and thousands will be killed at the same time that we're spending millions of dollars trying to restore our salmon runs. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
It's a very passionate subject for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you hear me very well?
Very good.
I can't hear too well. Now, I sent an email to each of you individuals last night, which your aides may have told you about or not. I don't know whether you would like me to read that or not.
I don't really need your whole thing, but you can paraphrase it for us. Or just
I can
give
do
us
some of it?
Sure,
no,
please.
Nice.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, first I'll tell you where I live. It's C. Ivan Vistica, and I live at 14271 Wilco Highway, northeast in Woodburn. That's Oregon 214. The property that we have runs from the Pudding River east to McKee School Road, and it's bisected by the Willamette Valley Railroad. What I have said here is I'm strongly opposed to passing House Bill 3058. Please do not change present law by House Bill 3058. House Bill 3058 strips away we Oregon landowners' rights just to accommodate the path for natural gas pipeline. Furthermore, the bill broadens the definition of a proper applicant to expressly include a person gaining condemnation authority without having landowner authority nor having exercised eminent domain. That is not right. Over the years, we Oregon landowners have complied with the land use laws and rules, the DEQ laws and rules, and water resources laws and rules, and so on. Now along comes the out-of-state companies aiming to use a legislative process to change the laws and rules that fit their agenda to develop LNG terminals and associated pipelines in Oregon on their schedule and to their cost, and to reduce their cost. I wrote here, importance of private property. The authors of the U.S. Constitution maintained that freedom and right to own land was the most basic of all fundamental civil liberties. Either you have the right to own property or you are the property of a totalitarian government. Elsewhere read during a 1993 congressional debate over the National Biological Survey, an amendment prohibiting entry onto private property without a written landowner consent drew such support from both Democratic and Republicans alike that the bill sponsor, Jerry Studs of Massachusetts, said reauthorization of the Clean Water Act and Endangered Species species had better include property rights wording because we almost had a riot on the floor of the House last week. Now, this House Bill 3058, the way I see it, would affect us that these guys would get on the property as they please once they got the state permission. And they want to dig on our property. That's their entry hole to go under the Pudding River. And they're back almost three-quarters the length of this width of the Capitol building. That's how far back from the river they want to start to dig west over to the neighbor's property across the river where that exit holds at. Now, I did some calculating here one day how much dirt is coming out of there on our property alone, and it was 828 cubic yards that would be the pipeline would take up, pipe and the dimension, the 36 inch. Well, if you put 10 yards of dirt on a truck, that's 83 truckloads. Well, we've got to put that someplace. And yeah, also, this is why I want them to stay off of the property until they get their eminent domain procedures exercised. It may come a little sooner, as you say. That's okay, as long as they comply with the rules and regulations, just like I have to do. If there's no further questions?
Well, we may ask, but I'll let this other person talk first, and then we'll see if we have questions for either of you.
Your turn.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the public record, my name is Sam Sweeney, farm in Dayton, along with our other family members. We grow a wide variety of different crops. Well, on our farm, we not only raise crops, we also provide a lot of habitat for fish and wildlife, and we've been involved in a lot of conservation projects. We urge the committee to reject House Bill 3058 for the following reasons. House Bill 3058 is a blatant affront to the citizens of Oregon who believe in private property rights. By the initiative process during either in 2004, and I'm not sure it was 2004 or 2006, Oregon citizens passed a law prohibiting a private for property profit company to acquire easements or property through eminent domain. This bill is in direct contradiction to that right. If passed, it allows any company to easily request and receive fill and removal permits on a landowner's property without their knowledge or permission. Our farm, along with many others, is participating in USDA Natural Resource Conservation Service programs with the goal of enhancing and improving habitat for fish and wildlife. We strongly resent any intrusion by out-of-state companies in these fragile areas that we are trying to protect. It's important that landowners' property rights be protected and also Oregon's natural resources. I strongly urge you to reject this bill. Earlier, I heard some pro 3058 people talk about, well, it's a matter of expediency. It'll move the process along faster. In the interest of protecting private property rights, I think it should be slowed down just a little bit. I mean, I don't think that's any more than right to be courteous to private property owners and protect their rights. So I would take that into consideration. The other thing I'd take into consideration as a committee member, this has worked well in the past. Why do you really need to change it? So I'd ask that question. Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you both. Any questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much. So I have, it looks like Joan Zuber, maybe the last person that's on the list, unless I missed somebody. Gary, did I call you up before? Do you want to come up? You can too. Gary Bauer, sorry about that. I think I missed you on my first list.
My name is Joan Zuber. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. I'm a small woodland owner in Clackamas County. I serve on the Soil and Water Conservation District Board of Directors. I have had quite a bit of contact with people that live in my area, in Malala area, that are really up in arms over the pipeline. Their lives have been disrupted over the last couple of years. the pipeline changes where it's going. They have businesses. They have concern about the water crossings. I really feel that this should be slowed up, and I am totally against this bill. It just seems like it would help. It would help to push this faster. And I was insulted by the Associated Oregon Industries and the union fellow that were. If we didn't have the big problem with the unemployment rate right now, would there be this big demand to push this through for jobs? I don't think so. And these are temporary jobs. And at what cost? And, you know, we gotta get these, you know, pesky landowners out of the way, run over the top of them, get them so that they aren't presenting such a problem so we can have jobs. I mean, it just seems so short-sighted to me. And I have, family members. My late husband were strong union members. And I'm for jobs. But I felt this was really very insulting to the people of Oregon. And I guess my concern is everything has been mentioned, and I don't need to go on. Thank you.
Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Gary Bauer with Northwest Natural. Might give you just a little bit of history, and that is that prior to 2001, prior legislation passing, actually a linear project could be an applicant. So whether it was a highway project or a utility, you could be the applicant. We had a project that we actually were building at that time. It took us 5+ years to get through the permitting process, and by the time we got the permit, we were going into the winter heating season, and we knew from our engineering studies that we needed to provide additional capacity to certain parts of our service territory. So we actually went ahead and built 10 miles of that pipeline, which was a 60-mile project, while we were still working with other landowners to negotiate values and et cetera on the property. So it's not completely it's not new to actually have an applicant be a project. And in part what this bill does is it goes back to that level, but in addition it does make sure that the property owners are notified that they have an opportunity for hearing, and that again, you cannot go on someone's land. You cannot go in and do any kind of fill and removal process until you actually have worked that out with the landowner. Either they've given you consent or you've worked through the whole process of eventually acquiring the property. I might comment, too, that it's not just long linear projects now that are under this situation. We maintain throughout our system about 14,000 miles plus of pipe. We've had situations where we, because they go under a stream, and over a period of years, maybe this is, you know, streams will try to change their course. And so we had one a while recently after this law passed where we had to go back and relocate that facility. Quick story is you send a diver down because you check your facilities. Diver can't get in until a certain period of time during the summer. You then need to apply for a permit. In this case, the landowner whose property the pipe was on, we wanted to talk to them about moving it over on their property to a different site. The landowner was traveling around the United States. We eventually located the landowner. The landowner then took a period of time to be able to give his daughter legal authority to actually sign the application. We had a very good working relationship with that landowner, but if this had been in place, we could have at least started the permit process. You file the application. The Department of State Lands has 30 days to decide if the application is complete. Do they have the information they need to even start reviewing the application? And then they have 120 days to review the application. The department also has what they call in-water work periods. There's only certain times of the year that you can actually go and do that work. And so we were trying to get all this done in time to relocate the facility prior to the winter heating season. So I just want to let you know, it's not always a project that's going to expand, you know, many miles. It can be a very site-specific one. We also need to try to just figure out how to keep the process flexible enough that you can do it. Again, you can't go on the landowner's property without their permission, without concluding the whole process of getting that permission. Thank you.
Any questions for this? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's all the people who are on the list. And is there anybody else who didn't get on the list who would like to speak? The only other thing, I just wanted to confirm what I just heard. So, Louise, are you willing to come back up for a second? Thanks. So prior to the law that is currently in effect, linear projects could have been, the applicant could have been not the property owner, like this bill.
Mr. Chair, under the pre-July 1, 2002, which is when Senate Bill 529 took effect, anyone could apply for a removal fill permit on anyone else's land.
Okay. And that worked for a lot of years without a
since 1967.
Okay. That's interesting. Any other questions for Louise? Thank you very much. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3058. And we did receive all the paperwork we need for these two bills.
Well,
is that correct? Yeah, please do that.
Members of the committee, with regard to House Bill 3058, we have a no revenue impact statement, which we'd received earlier, and we just received a minimal expenditure impact statement with regard to the Dash 17 amendment. So if you chose to adopt those amendments, we would have the fiscal and revenue with regard to them. Same situation is true with regard to 3153. In that particular case, we have, with regard to the Dash 5 amendments, a no revenue impact and a minimal expenditure impact statement, which is the same as it would have been for the original measure itself. And one other point, if I could put on the record, with regard to 3058, my office received some 350 letters electronically from people. Those are available to any members of the committee if you would like to receive them. I believe there are several in the packet of materials you did receive as examples. Many of them are very similar in their format, but we did receive that many responses or inquiries mostly. The overwhelming number were in opposition.
Any other questions? I'm going to open a work session on 3153. That was the first one we heard.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move the Dash 5s into House Bill 3153.
Representative Edwards moves the Dash 5 amendments dated May 22nd into
Mr. Chair.
House Bill 3153.
The Dash A5s.
Dash A5s. That's right.
521.
Okay. Thank you.
Because that's what it says on the amendments.
Representative Edwards moves the Dash 5As to House Bill 3153A. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I had been communicating with a local utility in my district, Pioneer Cooperative, who had not been supportive of House Bill 3153. I heard from other utilities here today that the Dash 5 was acceptable to them. So I am going to be a yes vote in the committee, but reserve my right to change my vote to a no on the floor pending further discussion.
I appreciate that. Any other discussion? So we'll do the amendment first. Is there any objection to the A5 amendments? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3153 as amended to the floor.
A.
Excuse me, House Bill 3153A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Edwards moves House Bill 3153A to the floor with a due pass.
As amended.
As amended. Again, I'll go through that one. Representative Edwards moves House Bill 3153A as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? We've already heard the
Sorry,
one. That's okay. That's fine. Any other discussions? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Gelcher?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Roland?
Aye. Motion passes. Is there anyone here who is looking forward to carrying this bill.
Mr. Chair, I would suggest Representative Clem, if you're
oh, that's true.
Given that
I will we'll have Representative Clem, otherwise we'll find another. Thank you very much. We'll close our work session on House Bill 3153A, and we're going to open a work session on House Bill 3058.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the dash 17 amendments be adopted into House Bill 3058.
Representative Berger moves that we adopt the dash 17 amendments dated May 20th to House Bill 3058. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to the dash 17 amendments? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3058 as amended with the dash 17 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Berger moves House Bill 3058 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Yes.
Representative
Gelser, sorry about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am going to be barely a no vote on this bill. I really want to commend the chair and Representative Reed in particular for the excellent work that has gone into trying to get this into a form that could be acceptable to all of the stakeholders. And I know and understand that that has been an extraordinary lift and an extraordinary amount of work, and I have tremendous gratitude for that. I believe in looking at the dash 17 amendment that many of the concerns have been addressed. The reason for my no vote is some remaining concern about the LNG pipeline, and like the committee administrator from my own district, I have received overwhelming communication about this bill. But as in the other bill, I would like to go back and talk with folks and would reserve my right to change my vote to a yes on the floor, because I'm not confident that all of those that have written to me in opposition to this bill understand the work that has gone into it and what the bill says today.
Thank you. Other Representative Nolan.
Mr. Chair, I want to echo the sentiments that Representative Gelser mentioned on all counts. I will be voting against this bill, but I want to acknowledge the work and the outreach and the stretching that particularly Representative Reed and the chair here have done on this bill. I don't know that it could have ever stretched far enough to satisfy me, but I do recognize all the work that's been done.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm deeply appreciative of the people who came down. They testified, and their objections to this bill are really objections to LNG. I understand that. I have, as you know, Mr. Chair, spent an awful lot of time this session working on a transportation package involving moving and growing new roads in the state so that we can move people and goods around as well. And this bill has clear implications there. I heard testimony from folks who said if LNG were out, they wouldn't object to this bill. This bill is bigger than natural gas pipelines. It has great implications for a lot of infrastructure that we're going to need as we grow ourselves. Eminent domain is an issue, but I don't think this bill makes it worse or better. It remains a part of the mix here. I will support this bill, Mr. Chair. I think that it's important that we move forward on these linear facilities, all of them, as we have in the past, without the bobble that we put in 2001 that clearly tied us up when we moved these things. So I will support the bill, Mr. Chair, but with clear understanding that the folks who object to LNG are sincere. They would like to stop it here. They will be back to stop it in other ways. I understand that, and they are heartfelt and sincere in their objection to LNG coming to the state.
Thank you. Any other comments? Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As somebody that literally walked into this committee hearing room not knowing how I was going to vote on this bill today. I want to say, explain how and why I'm going to vote the way I am. It seems to me, and I am going to be supporting the bill. I heard arguments on both sides of this bill that I frankly found to have a whole lot of merit, both for and against. This bill is about much more than LNG, although certainly that has become the focus of this particular bill that deals with removal fill permits. There was a gentleman, I can't remember who it was, that spoke against the bill, who I thought was particularly compelling when he spoke of we ought to have some sort of demonstration of public need if we're going to go to the extraordinary step of ultimately what could be condemnation in order to run this infrastructure that serves the public good and the public benefit. I'm not sure that demonstrating a public need has a whole lot to do with a removal fill permit, but it seems like it's something that should be perhaps in the much larger process. And again, sitting on the Rules Committee, we catch a whole lot of issues that just come here from other committees, and I'm not terribly familiar with the entirety of the permitting process, either federally or at the state level. So, in balance, I think that it's an appropriate bill for infrastructure type projects in this state, so I will be supporting it.
Thank you. Further comments? I guess I want to say thank you also to all the people that came. I think the only time that public policy is made and really gets vetted is when lots of people come here and talk about it. I, too, have this ongoing deal that when I see this bill, I don't see LNG. I see all sorts of projects. And so, for me, it's difficult to separate the one out. And I understand the reasons why people might want that. I don't know that we're going to need LNG, and I'm not sure that any of these projects will be built. I think that it's really still an open question on that. But finding out and getting the process to work appropriately and hearing from people about how the process now doesn't work to get to the kinds of conversations we have to have about whether we need it or not. I think we have a lot of protections in place. I trust the people at our Division of State Lands to do the right kinds of things. And so I, too, am going to be in favor of this bill. And I appreciate sincerely all of the testimony and the way in which everybody here has given their testimony and made their points of view known. And so I thank you all for being here as part of this process. So with that, unless I hear any other, and I do want to thank Representative Reed. There are some new things in 17 that clearly spell out people's property rights, and that they don't get on the property, you can't do it just because they have this permit. I think that wasn't originally in the old days when we had this was the way it was run. They didn't have that. They didn't have some of the requirements to notify people. This is much better than it was before. I know that for some people it's different and not as good as it is in their opinion today, but from my perspective, we put some safeguards in there to assure that people's property rights are respected and that conversations go on. So with that, we'll do a roll call vote.
Representative Girard?
Aye.
Representative Gelter?
No.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
No.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Roland?
Aye. Motion passes, and we're going to have Representative Schaffler carry this bill. And with that, we're going to close our work session on House Bill 3058. Is there any other information to come before our committee?
Mr. Chair, have a good weekend.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. With that, we're going to close our rules meeting for today.
Information type thing. I just...